I think during that time, I talked a lot of trash. I was very outgoing, and so they thought it would be pretty. They wanted me to be exactly who I was on that. So what would happen is I would write them, and my mom would look them over and say, "No, you can't put that in there. You can't say that." And so she would edit it. But it was a lot of fun. A lot of players during that time, I didn't even think about it, would read. And I would talk about just, you know, players I played against. Sometimes I'd, you know, give a little jab here and there, and then have to see them on the weekend when we played AAU ball.
That was Eastern Washington head men's basketball coach Shantae Leggins. He's today's guest. Welcome to Dan Dickow's Quarantine Series on the Scorebook Life Today podcast. As the world of sports is shut down due to the coronavirus, we're ramping things up a notch here at Scorebook Live. Every weekday, Dan interviews an expert in the world of sports, from star hoopers and coaches like Steve Kerr, Jamal Crawford, and Doug Christie, to seven-time Mr. Olympia bodybuilder Phil Heath. We hope you're entertained and maybe learn a thing or two as we navigate these uncertain times. The easiest way to tune in is by subscribing. In addition to our weekly Washington High School Sports News and Conversation podcast released Thursdays, hosted by myself, Andy Bueller, fellow reporter Todd Millis, Dan is bringing you interviews just like this one delivered 5 days a week. Head to wherever you get your podcast, subscribe for free, and while you're there, leave a review. We'd love to hear from you. Before we get to Dan's interview today, a word from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking with drive-up ATMs. And Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of Scorebook Live. They care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the entire state of Washington. Head to wfdbank.com to learn how they can help you meet your financial goals. That's wafdbank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. We hope everybody's staying safe and healthy. We're just as excited for high school sports to return as you are. Now, Dan Dickow.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live. Today, our podcast during our quarantine series, where we continue to bring you a conversation with an expert in the field of sports. It could be a coach, an athlete, front office executive. Today is a former player turned one of the best up-and-coming coaches in all of college basketball. Right down the road here in Eastern Washington, none other than Shantae Leggins from Eastern Washington. Shantae, hopefully you and your family are well and everything is looking to have another promising year for the Eagles next year.
Yeah, they're doing well. Family's doing good. Kids 2 and 3 years old at home, so that's really trying. So I got to give it a lot of love to my child care over at Noah's Ark. They do a great job with the kids. So now I know exactly what they have to go through every day with all the kids. But it's been great being at home. My wife's doing great, so family's doing well, and so it's good. And the players, obviously, we have 7 in town right now, so they're doing pretty well too.
That's obviously great to hear that you're healthy and your team, the guys who are still in town, are well taken care of. I want to go back really quickly to your playing career. Grew up in Southern California before you went to Cal and played there for 3 years in the Pac-10. Then you finished your college career at Fresno State. Did you always want to become a coach during your playing career, or how did that develop?
Well, growing up, I always wanted to be a teacher, and I thought that was something that I was going to push myself towards. But when I got to college, obviously, you want to go to the NBA. That's your goal. That's your dream. Around my junior year, I still thought I was pretty good, but I played against some really good players. And so I was like, hey, man, if these guys are going to be, 6'4", playing my same position, it's going to be hard. I thought the game like a coach. And so, I'm like, hey, at the end of the day, I'm probably going to have to coach. I want to coach. I want to be around the game. And, depending on how my career went, I always knew I wanted to, be in some form around basketball. And I thought coaching would be the best thing because I wanted to be a teacher growing up. And so I think that really put me, it put a lot of stuff in perspective as I kept getting older and maturing and understanding what I want to do in life. And, you know, coaching was one of those things that I thought would really fulfill some of the things I wanted to be as a teacher, but also, you know, get to deal with kids that were just like me growing up. And I thought that would be very fulfilling.
You mentioned playing in the Pac-10, which is now the Pac-12.
Yes.
There were some unbelievable guards on the West Coast
during
that time. Any of those guards stand out to you and why?
Well, shoot, man. You know, there was a lot of things going on. I mean, you played in the Pac-10 and then, you know, you went over to GU and then, you know, you get to see players like yourself, but I also got to see, you know, growing up, Damon Stoudemire. He was one of my idols, a little lefty. You know, he on that team, had Khalid Reeves on that team. You know, I went to Cal, so I got to see a lot of Jason Kidd. I mean, and, you know, just as growing up, you know, the Pac-10 was one of those conferences that had every guard you could possibly think of at every level, small, bigger guards. You know, it was a league full of just players, man. And so, you know, I got enamored just by watching those guys play and, you know, just being around. You know, growing up, played against Earl Watson. That was my, you know, Jason Gardner, Gilbert Arenas was at Arizona. You had, you know, Julius Barnes at Stanford. And then obviously you had Luke Ridnour, who was a stud up at Oregon that no one knew about, who was a skinny, you know, little dude up here throwing these passes like he was Jason Williams. But you grew up with so many good players and guards just on the West Coast alone. And, you know, that was just one of the things that, you know, you just got to see in the Pac-10 every night in and night out. Even when you're at home, when you're younger, you know, it was one of those things that you follow. I followed everybody, you know, during those times. Baron Davis, all those guys, you follow them. And you get to see, you know, who the best. And I thought we had some of the best players in the West Coast, just not in the Pac-10, but throughout that whole, you know, throughout the whole West Coast.
You and I have gotten to know each other a little bit over the last few years, first as an assistant for Coach Hayford and now as the head coach. You know, I've been able to call games and on different platforms for Eastern, whether it's a TV game or a radio game for Westwood One. So that's where we got to know each other. But I'll have to say that the first time I knew about Shante Leggins, and this will probably be a throwback for you, was the Slam Diaries back in high
school. SoCal Slam Diaries, yes.
Tell me how that came about and how fun was that?
It came about, I was in the gym and a guy came up to me and he just kept talking and said, hey, would you mind doing a diary? And at the time, you know, you're in high school. I'm like, man, no, I don't want to do no diary. What's a diary look like? He's like, well, it could be one of the first of its kind. You know, you could, you know, you know, this was once I started thinking about schools I was going to and once I had a little bit of game, you know. Before then, you know, I was just this little 5'7", little tiny dude that didn't really, you know, they didn't think would grow to be 5'11". Yes. But but they asked me if I could do it. I think during that time, I talked a lot of trash. I was very outgoing. And so they thought it would be pretty – they wanted me to be exactly who I was on that. So – what would happen is I would write them and my mom would look them over and say, no, you can't put that in there. You can't say that. And so she would edit it. But it was a lot of fun. A lot of players during that time, I didn't even think about it, was reading them. And I would talk about just, you know, players I played against. Sometimes I'd, you know, give a little jab here and there and then have to see them on the weekend when we played AAU ball. So, that, you know, it was a lot of fun. But that's when I started thinking that, you know, sports can be, you know, a platform to reach some people, you know, not everybody, but people that were kind of like who I was. And, you know, I would talk about throughout those things, I talk about, you know, the players I play against. I didn't think Gilbert Arenas is that good. He's not good at Grant High School. And then he'd come out and drop 52 on us that next day. And, you know, it was just some of those, you know, that was one of the cool times. It was the first time I ever been noticed for writing or anything to do with education in my life. And so I took that as a thing I should be getting, you know, I should be getting into college because I could actually write something that people like to read. And so it was one of those deals that I really enjoyed.
That's awesome to hear how that came about and how you stoked the fire going against some opponents in high school. And I'm sure it carried over to college. But
bad,
you mentioned writing. You mentioned writing. So if you're a wordsmith with the pen, do you come up with the scouting reports, and do you write all the detailed descriptions for Eastern now in their pregame scouting reports?
When I was assistant, I did. I would do a lot of them. Now that I'm a head coach, I go over them with our guys. I have some really, really good assistants. I mean, really, really good. I mean, they all, I think sooner or later will be head coaches. They're studs. I mean, that, you know, we look at our team and they do a lot of the scouting reports. I watch it. See, as a head coach, you get to watch film and then you get to dissect their scouting report and put in what you want to do after they've done all the work. You know, as an assistant, you're busting your tail, you're watching 15 games, you're making sure every last detail is right, and then you give it to the head coach. And so they do a really good job, and I don't even have to switch a lot of them. But when I was an assistant, the guys used to make fun of me because they would call them legisms. You know, I'd make up some, you know, I'd say, you know, you guys all know Cody Binzel, but Cody Binzel had to guard somebody on UW on isolation. And I'm like, coach, you can't put Cody out there. It's like putting a sheep out there with a dinosaur or some things like that. And they'd always make fun of me because I would never get the right sayings. The stars are all trying to line up together, not align. Just goofy stuff. And the guys would pick up on it. And the players, you know, the coaches would always make fun of me. But the guys started picking up on stupid things I would say. But they would always make sense. And so, but yeah, as an assistant coach, I would do scouting reports to put my own little touch on it sometimes. And you know, our guys do the same thing as coaches now.
What was the biggest adjustment going from an assistant for, I believe it was 8 years under Jim Hayford, to now being the head guy? So you just finished your third year. You've had tremendous success. Eastern, you guys, this year before the coronavirus shut down everything, you were Big Sky champs. You looked like you might be the team to come out of the Big Sky tournament and make an NCAA tournament bid. But what was the biggest adjustment from assistant to head coach for you?
Well, for me, it was the relationships you have with the players. Like, I have great relationships as an assistant. I think I feel like I have great relationships as the head coach. But as a head coach, players won't tell you the same stuff they would tell you as an assistant, I'm finding out, you know. And that part was hard to deal with because I got so close with a lot of the guys. And when you're handling playing time, everything changes. It's you know, they more tiptoe around you more than they would as an assistant. As an assistant, and you know this as a player, it's not like a substitute teacher, but you could, as a player, be more yourself with the assistant coach. You know, you can open up a little bit more. You could be a little bit more vulnerable to your assistant coach than you can the head coach. Obviously, I have great relationships, and I spend time, and I talk to the guys a lot, but it's a little different, and probably because I'm getting older. You know, I'm more now, you know, getting to the age where I could be a lot of those kids, like, you know, parents instead of like their big brother. And so that changed a lot, obviously. You know, that was a huge one for me. But all the other things that goes into it, like handling the budget and, you know, doing things that I would want to do that, you know, didn't happen previously, and just making some decisions that, you know, you never thought of as a head coach that you'd have to make. And feeling a little bit more pressure. Like at night when I was an assistant, obviously you're thinking about the game and you're doing this and that, but you get to sleep eventually. As a head coach, it's like I don't sleep that often. You know, I'm thinking more about, well, if I could switch this, well, what happens if he does this? And, you know, you start thinking about the other things that you didn't think of as an assistant coach, because, you know, that record that you end up with at the end of the year is going to be on your record forever. As an assistant, you go to bed, I'm 0-0 as a head coach. I still got, you know, you still have all these aspirations. But, you know, there's a lot of coaches out there that, you know, are right there. They're great coaches, but they just haven't had the luck that some coaches that are doing, you know, succeeding, obviously, you know. But it's a little bit more nerve-wracking, you know, because you got to think that you're handling your assistant coaches. So you got to think about them all the time. When I was an assistant, all I thought about was myself and the players. But as a head coach, you got to think about them. You got to think about the managers. You're a lot of coaches, you got to think about the managers. You got to think about the GAs, the players, their parents. You know, you're just not a position. You just don't worry about the guards. You got to worry about them all. And so it's a little bit more daunting than you would think. But I love it. I wouldn't want to change anything for it. I mean, this is – it's fun. It makes you feel like you're playing a little bit again. You still get those butterflies before the game. With that being said, as a player, you can handle. You can say, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to get 25 tonight. As a coach, you don't know what this 18 to 22-year-old, you know, young man is going to do. Like, is he nervous? Did he break up with his girlfriend? Did he, Is he too tired? Did he play Fortnite or 2K or something too late? Why is he playing like he's playing? And you got to figure those parts out as a head coach a little bit more. So it's been a lot of fun, but it is an adjustment. But I was looking forward to it, and I couldn't wait.
Well, you've had tremendous success in your first 3 years as a head coach, and I feel you on the assistants being, you know, undefeated on their record. That's yeah. One reason that, quite frankly, I didn't get into coaching is because I didn't want the burden of a head coach of being up all night and doing different things. When the game's over, when I'm done broadcasting, it's done. I can enjoy it. Maybe I screwed up a name or two. So what? Unless yeah. There's a ridiculous internet troll, I probably won't get called out on it. But
there's a couple, I bet.
Sure. Yeah, there has been in the past. And unfortunately, I work with two of them in the broadcast booth for Gonzaga games, Greg Heister and Richard Fox,
always.
Who you know well being in the area.
Yep.
You mentioned the butterflies as a player and butterflies mm-hmm. as a coach. You've got one of the most unique rituals I've ever seen for a coach pregame. You walk the court for about
yes.
a good 15, 20 minutes. Most coaches either stay back in the locker room, continue to read scouting reports or watch film, or some come out and watch their guys go through workouts. How did you come up with this for you, and what does it do to set you in the right mind frame for the game?
Well, as a player, and at home, I get to walk around. See, at home games, there's a thing on the outside of our gym, so I can walk around and no one could really notice me. On the road, I walk around the court, you know, and just, but it really calms me down. I get to watch the guys warm up. It makes me not change everything before the game. I mean, our assistant coach, like I said, as a player, you know, I needed some outlet to get, you know, calm. I get really amped up. I mean, even as a player. So when I was a player in my first year, you know, I would be on the bus and I'd talk. I wouldn't stop talking. It was just, and I didn't know, you know, because in high school, you're the man. No one really messes with you. You can do whatever you want, right? On the bus, they don't have to say anything to you. In college, not the man anymore. There's grown men on that team. And so, you know, I'm still talking. So Coach Braun would say, so you're sitting next to me. You're done. Just be quiet. Let's get to the bus. You know, shut up. Like, just stop. Stop talking. So I would have to sit next to Coach Braun on the bus to the games whenever we had a bus game. And so that wasn't working for him because I would talk his ear off. And so what started happening was they would send me to the gym before everybody else. And I'd get to the gym like 2.5 hours early. I'd be taped, dressed, ready to go. I'd be shooting in the gym. I'd be, you know, doing whatever, like game, you know, whatever. But it was something that really kept me away from, and it sucks to be a point guard away from everybody because, you know, you just, and so when the game came, I was more focused. And so when, you know, my first couple of games as a coach, I would get really amped up and, you know, our first game and I changed, we had a scouting report. It was really good. And I was sitting in there and I was, you know, I was doing what everyone else would do when I watched everybody coach. And, you know, I was like, okay, I don't want to change everything because we put in so much work into this and that, why change it, you know, 45 minutes before the game after we've done it all week long. And so, you know, my wife, who's right now, who's going to be there forever, said, you need to figure out a way to let out some energy. You should just maybe just walk around for a little bit. And I started doing that, and I did that at the Stanford game, and we beat Stanford. So I thought that was it. Do it every time. That's what we'll do. We just beat Stanford. That's a pass, the biggest school, and then we lost the next 9 straight games. So maybe that wasn't it, but it did keep me focused, and it made me. It also let me see the guys warming up, but it also just let me just relax before the game because I get a little bit too amped and. The coaches notice, and I don't want the players to feel tight. And so, you know, I even do it before practice. The guys will see you, and the guys will tell you that, yeah, all he does is walk before practice. And it's just something that I started doing my second game of my coaching career because I was too wound up, too tight, and I just thought that I could, after watching that last bit of film the night before, let's change this, or even after the shoot around, let's change this. Which, you know, I just thought that. Once we had the scouting report in and the players knew it, there's no reason to change it. Obviously, you adjust during the game, but don't adjust before the game even happens. You have all these things in your head again, like I said, that you don't have as an assistant, because you just say, here's my scouting report. You don't like it, you don't like it. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. And now it's like, well, do I really like that scouting report that we put together? You know, is this the way to go, or should we switch it? I just watched this team do this, and let's ice ball screen, something we don't do, but it worked this game. And so walking around really, really, really slowed that down, because I can't write on the board, and I'm in there, and I give myself, you know, I try to get in there right around the hour mark, because I won't change anything. And so once that hour mark hits and they start their warm-ups and they start their stretching, I'm off the court, and I'm inside trying to do anything else to keep my mind off of changing anything that we can.
Well, that's what some of the best coaches do. They have an awareness of
your
personality. They have an awareness of what can and should be done time frame wise leading up to the game. And so glad to hear that that's how that came about, and that success with it.
It was tough.
Yeah, I can only imagine. But you were recently recognized by ESPN.com in their 40 under 40 list. And so essentially what that was, you know, they created a list of who they viewed as the top 40 college basketball coaches under the age of 40. Could be a head coach, could be an assistant, somebody that they feel has a tremendous amount of potential to become a great coach at the Division I level. You made that list. Now, you've had success for 3 years as a head coach at Eastern Washington. At what point do you start looking, I don't want to say looking for other opportunities, but what aspirations do you have as a coach, and what did it mean to make that list?
Well, my aspirations is always been the same, even when I started it, you know, is the win. Obviously, you want to win. You want to do whatever you can. I mean, my goal is to win a national championship. You know, that should be every goal of every coach or every player. Like, you as a player, you growing up, you want to go to the NBA. That's the best you could possibly do. I want to win a national championship. You know, you see schools that start with, you know, small beginnings, like GU, not a little bit before you got there, but you excelled their program. You see like schools like Loyola Chicago and all these schools, Butler and those types of things, get to the thing near the mountaintop and try to get it. So that's what I aspire. That's what I really want to do. And, you know, being at Eastern has been great. My wife went to school here. My kids love it here. I love it here. And so, you know, you don't go out and look. I don't go out and look for jobs. You know, I know a lot of young coaches do. I just feel that it puts added pressure on you to win and go get this spectacular job. But who's to say that next job you go to, you lose and you crap out, you know? At Eastern, I think there's been a culture that we've been building here. Obviously, it's a smaller school. You know, it doesn't have some of the things that other schools per se have, but it does have great people. And so I'm excited about, you know, being at Eastern. And so, you know, you really think about just winning. And so last year we finally got a taste of winning the championship, and that was great. We wanted a taste to go to the NCAA tournament, but we didn't have that opportunity. Who knows? Jacob Davison may have the tournament of his life, and Mason plays really good, and you never know. That's the best part about hoops. And so as you look and you look at your career and you keep going, you know, you want to be known as a winner. You want to be known as somebody that is good at what they do. I mean, you do stuff to be, you know, recognized and be the best at, you know, what you do. You want to win championships. And so that's what I at the end of the day want to do. And then, you know, being voted or being selected to be on that top, you know, top 40 list is huge, because you put in the work, you know, but you don't do it alone. I mean, I have some of the best, you know, coaches and people around me that make me look really good. I mean, if you look at a whole staff, not one guy's over 40. I'm the oldest guy on the staff. And so, you know, these young guys really work. I say young guys, but they're about 2 years younger than me and stuff like that. But they work hard. And I feel that, you know, if you put in the work and the players believe in what you're doing, then you're going to have a successful team. And I think having, you know, all those coaches around, it's a big deal. And there's so many good coaches on that list. And there's some coaches that didn't make the list, but they're really good. And I mean, you know, you have a couple guys from GU, and winning helps. Winning always helps. And so, you know, you got the guy from GU who's on there, who's a Northwest guy. I know him pretty well. I don't know him great, but I know where he's from. And then the Washington State guy. But then you got those guys ahead of you. That you look to. It's kind of like when you were a player and you had those guys ranked ahead of you. You're like, okay, now I got to see what I got to go do. Okay, I see those. But you have all these older coaches that were at one point, you know, our age, you know, and they had guys that were like in their 60s and 70s still coaching, and you're the guys trying to go be those guys. And so, you know, it's great to be noticed for the hard work you put in, but, you know, until you start winning, you know, consistently, you know, that list is great, but you just want to keep climbing and you want to be the best at what you do. And that's what I'm hoping, that one day I could sit there and be holding, you know, cutting down some nets or something like that, winning a national championship. I know, you know, people say it's crazy that commercial, you say it's crazy until you do it, you know, but that's how I feel. I really do believe that if you could, you know, everything aligns and you get everything in the right position, you could be as great as you try to be or as great as you want to be.
Well, I hear the passion in your voice. And when you have a passion about something, you're going to leave no stone unturned. And I can only imagine you're going to do that while you're at Eastern. And maybe it happens at Eastern. Maybe it happens somewhere else. So I wish you nothing but the best about chasing that national title. Last question for you, though, Shante, before I let you go. We talked about your walking ritual before a game. Now, if you're going to go for a walk from your office, walk home, are you going to be listening to an audiobook, or are you going to have some music on? And depending on which one it is, what are you listening to?
So it just depends. And, you know, what's funny is, and the guys laugh at me before the games, like that hour. So I could either turn on a show, like a TV show, something I've been watching, or I'll turn on a book really loud or the music really loud. When I go for walks, usually I'm usually listening to music, and it's all kinds of music. And the guys always laugh because of my taste in music. And so it varies. Okay. I'm a mixed kid from Santa Barbara that played the ball down in Southern California in Los Angeles a lot with my guys, but, you know, grew up around my brothers who listen to AC/DC and all the hardcore stuff. And then my sister would listen to all the R&B. You know, we have one of those, I forget how they call them, those types of families. But my playlists are some of the funniest playlists in the world. I mean, I got real rap music, no mumbles. All right, so that's, I hate the mumbles. Then you got your chill hits. You know, you got your game effing day with EFFING. I mean, there's a lot of different things you listen to. I'm old school. You know, I call them WGS songs. If you're one of our players, you know what that means. And so, you know, it's, I love music. I love all types of it. And so I listen to music a lot, and it's really soothing. It just depends what kind of mood you're in, but it's usually going to be music on the bus. Now on the bus or the plane, it's always an audio book. But when I'm moving and things like that, it's gotta be music, because my mind starts to wander if I'm walking. So if I'm sitting down, just chilling and not doing too much, it's always a book. It's always going to be an audio book of, you know, a coach, audio book of a podcast, or audio book or a podcast. It's always going to be something where you're learning. If I'm sitting down, if I'm walking, I got too much energy, I believe, just to focus on what I'm listening to. So if it's music, it's easy to go and listen to, but if I'm sitting, it's always a book.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. Hopefully you'll add the Scorebook Live Washington podcast to that playlist and listening to us occasionally. So Shante, again, thanks for taking the time. Best of luck to you and the Eastern Washington Eagle program in the upcoming season. And I look forward to seeing you again at some point in the gym.
Appreciate it. I also like to say, I watched you a bunch growing up. You were one of the reasons I went to Fresno, not just because of my family, but you did so well at GU. I thought, hey, that could be me. It wasn't, but I thought that could be me. And so, you know, watching you grow up, man, I mean, we're only a couple of years apart, but it was right around that wheelhouse, right? When you're in college, you see, you know, yourself doing really well. So it was fun watching you too. So little do that, I know people know, but I don't think people know, right? They don't know. Like, they don't know. Stars got right for you, right?
And so, I hear you. I appreciate those words, and you are right. The basketball community is close-knit. Guys follow each other. And it's been great getting to know you over these last few years since we both live in the Spokane area. So thanks again, Coach, and best of luck to you and your program.
Appreciate it, man. Keep in touch.